you got to worry though, because if you start talking too much and gaining too much power and leading parades around New York City and saying, preaching the message of love instead of the message of hate, you might end up with a guy holding Catcher in the Rye in his hand chasing you around the corner, you know?
You're listening to the Corbett Report.
Welcome, friends. James Corbett here at CorbettReport.com, coming to you at the end of April 2016. And today we have a very special guest on the line. We have Brent DeBoer, who some of you will, I'm sure, no doubt know as the drummer from the Dandy Warhols. And I hope some of you will know as the guy from Immigrant Union. Yes, immigrantunion.com. I hope some of you are familiar with that band. But if not, you will become acquainted with Brent and his work during this conversation. Let's bring him on board. Brent DeBoer, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I guess perhaps we should start this conversation by talking about how it is we came to be talking. I was listening to The Morning Monarchy, I was listening to Media Monarchy, James M. Pilato's podcast, and suddenly you were on there talking to him, and you were talking to him about alternative media and the Corbett Report. That's amazing. How did you come to discover the Corbett Report and Media Monarchy?
God, I guess it goes back a ways. I suppose, I started getting interested in the type of subject matter that you discuss, I suppose, maybe 2 or 3 years into Obama's presidency when it became clear that we'd all been hoodwinked and something just seemed off. And I got curious as to why, because I actually went and watched my wife and I and another friend of ours, we went down and watched him speak at the waterfront in Portland, Oregon. And we were really impressed, and I actually went out and voted for him and everything. We were really excited. We thought, okay, this guy is the anti-Bush, and we didn't like Bush and all the wars and everything. And so we thought, okay, this guy's great. He's just the opposite, and we love it. He's going to close Guantanamo, and there's going to be no more wars. Look, he's won the Nobel Peace Prize. This guy's amazing. And then after a couple few years, it became pretty clear that either one of two things, either he's just the biggest liar of all time and we'd all been fooled, or maybe, just maybe, he actually doesn't have anything to do with this at all. And maybe he's got, some scary people tapping him on the shoulder, telling him, here's what you got to say and this is what we're going to do. And I kind of feel like it's the latter, because I actually really felt like he was being serious about that stuff, it's common sense kind of stuff. But as I got curious about what was really going on, I at the same time I was getting into George Carlin and Bill Hicks, and I was kind of discovering YouTube for the first time and realizing you can watch all these amazing comedians, and I was getting into watching like university debates on various issues, and just kind of fell down that rabbit hole. And I think you were somewhere at the surface.
Somewhere there, beckoning.
Rabbit hole.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, well, so that's excellent. I mean, it's good to hear that people are taking what has clearly been a colossal letdown of some sort and trying to sort through that by trying to find the deeper meaning behind it. And I think that is the bright spot that comes from these types of events where people are clearly lied to, and there is a certain percentage of the population that will swallow that and just go along with it, but there is a certain percent of people who are looking for the real meaning behind that. So it's great to hear. Well, let's bring people up to speed on the Brent DeBoer story for people who don't know about you. Of course, you're, as I say, a drummer for the Dandy Warhols, just released a new album a few weeks ago, Distortland. You've just done a little tour in the States. You're about to embark on a month-long tour in Europe. Pretty exciting. But tell people about your background, where you're from. You're, Portland, of course, but now you're in Australia. How did you end up there?
I think in a similar way that you ended up in Japan, is that I met a woman who's from Melbourne. And we got married, and we have kids, and bought a house here. And I pretty much have my roots pretty firmly stuck in the ground here now. But and I met her actually when I was on tour here in Australia playing the Big Day Out tour, and she was just happened to be at a barbecue that we were at, and she knew nothing about my band and didn't know much about the kind of music I listened to, and I thought that was really cool actually. And and then we just stayed in touch, and so now here I am in Australia and really like it. It's good.
I can relate to that completely because my wife has very little understanding or interest in what I do. So yeah, that's good. I can unplug from this completely when I go spend time with my family.
Well,
that's excellent. So how are you enjoying Australia? What's it like? The obviously, there's some cultural differences. What's it like having transplanted yourself halfway around the world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody speaks, they basically speak English here. It's a little different, I gotta say. But I am, I think I do have a pretty firm grasp on the language now. But no, it's like a, it's like a, it's like Canada with better weather. And beaches. Yeah, it's really great. I've been here so many times and spent so much time here before I ever moved here that I knew what I was getting myself into. And I've always, way before I met my wife, I had said that this is one of the best places in the world. I just really loved it. And I knew I could move here before I even met her. So it worked out perfectly.
Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. Always good to hear that type of story. And just as a side note, the Australians are the only English speakers who have turned the word bicycle into an adverb. Well, bicycling. Anyway, that's my old standard Australian joke. Okay. All right. So you've moved to Australia. You've gone through this political awakening or whatever it is. And obviously, I mean, a lot has changed in your life in the last few years. The obvious question to ask is, how does that influence what you do? You're a musician. You express yourself artistically through your music. How does this type of transformation of understanding and consciousness, how does that manifest itself in music?
Well, it's tough for me because as a songwriter, I don't really know how to sit down and purposefully write a song. Like they just come out. Like I spend a bit of time playing guitar and I just kind of hum and sing and suddenly a song will just fall out. And generally speaking, that is going to be about, you know, loves and losses and, you know, feeling lonely or the opposite or whatever I'm feeling at that moment. And only one time has anything sort of political ever just fallen out, and that was that song "War Is Peace." And and I that was that came about. I had spent the previous evening. I wrote it like at 4 a.m. I just woke up and had the whole thing in my head. And the previous evening I was watching the three ring, you know what show of the Republican debates from the last, you know, reality show from
last go round.
Whatever. Yeah. And Ron Paul was cracking me up saying all this stuff like, yeah, well, you know, the guy asked him, he said, you advocate for legalization of marijuana. Would you advocate for the legalization of other drugs? And I remember him going, well, yeah. I mean, how many people in this room, if heroin was suddenly legal, would go out to the heroin store and start doing drugs? If you want heroin, you go and you get your heroin. It's not going to change anything for, you know. And I was just like, how could this guy be saying all these sensible things on television next to these idiots, you know? And he was just killing me. And when he kept saying, well, we brought the troops in. Let's bring them home. It's that simple. We don't need to be meddling in these foreign problems, you know. And I was like, how did this guy even get on TV? This is amazing. And and then that next morning I woke up and I just kind of wrote this song. It just fell out. I was like imitating his voice, like he was the one singing it, like you know, get him on home and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that was "War Is Peace" and talking about, you know, this country is committing suicide. We can't afford these foreign. Yeah, so that's where most of those lyrics came from. I was just trying to channel Ron Paul there.
Yeah,
and then that's like,
and we'll throw the link in. We'll throw the link in the show notes for people who haven't seen the video yet. The video opens with a little homage.
Yeah, I actually stole your intro. I did that in the hopes that one of your fans would maybe see it and then get a hold of you or send it to you or something. I did try to send it to you at one point, but I don't know if it worked. But,
wow. I wish I'd known. I wish I'd seen it earlier. Well, thank you so much for doing that. And we will throw it in the show notes so people can take a look at it. But I think that's an important point that you raised, that you can't direct the songwriting process. It's not a conscious, let's sit down and write a song about this. It is a process, it's an artistic process. It comes over you. And I think it has to be authentic. It has to come from what you're thinking and experiencing and feeling, and that comes out in whatever way it comes out. And I think people can sense when something is done to a formula, or, okay, let's write a song about this. I think that comes across as inauthentic to people. So I think that's why some truth music really resonates and some doesn't. I think some of it comes across as forced in a way.
Forced and preachy, maybe, or something. Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, a couple days ago. It doesn't seem like in like the top 40 in pop culture, there aren't your Bob Dylans or your Neil Youngs anymore writing songs like Ohio or, and it's like, I had to search and search and search. I know that a friend of mine was saying, well, no, but that's not true because, hip hop is where the real political stuff is. So I was doing some research there and there is a lot of it, but they're not on the radio. You know, they're not really allowed on the radio. You have to be kind of talking about booties and your car and things that you buy, you know, and stuff to really do that. So, or, you know, or the basic, you know, Oh Baby Baby songs.
Right. But
so,
is it still about getting your song on the radio? Is that still what people are driving for? I mean, clearly we're in a different distribution paradigm, if nothing else at this point.
You know, I think that you're right, but strangely, especially globally, the radio is still really important. It really is. It's just it still is the big hurdle is to get on the radio. And you know, in streaming services and stuff. But yeah, music is just there for people. People don't really expect to buy music anymore. You know, it's either free on the radio or streaming or whatever. So, but yeah, radio is still huge. If you get a song in regular circulation on the radio, then it's big. And if you could get a song like War is Peace, or even a song like, you know, Grandmaster Flash, The Messenger, which was, I guess, like one of the first socially important hip hop songs. But you just don't really hear that much anymore. And even in that song, he's just describing the poverty and the struggles that he's in and that he sees around him. But he doesn't really call out the government or the lack of help from you know, it's very observational. But I don't think that somebody, if you're really, really going big and calling out and you're switched on and you're aware of what's really going on and you start singing about it or rapping about it, I don't think your career is going to last that long.
It's difficult to make any sort of headway in the mainstream and to get yourself well known that way. There are those occasional people who do manage to do that and do it with integrity, and you get an Immortal Technique or Paris or people like that who manage to do something of substance. But as you say, it is a lot in the hip hop realm, not so much in the alt rock realm for some reason or other.
That's it. No, you know, and you know, even back in the day, country and western, and you know, you had you know, of course, Dylan, Masters of War, and you even had Black Sabbath doing War Pigs, which, if you look at those lyrics, it is scathing indictment of the system.
Which, and I believe there is now a change.org petition to make the official anthem of the United States.
Oh, yeah, I read about that. That's brilliant. That would be perfect.
Oh, how appropriate. Yeah. So, yeah, but that's interesting. I mean, think about that. The cultural relevance of a song like War Pigs from decades and decades ago. And what is there today that has that kind of cachet? It's just been so homogenized and so turned into sort of bubblegum safe elevator music that there isn't a space for a lot of artists to come forward with that. I mean, there was that space that existed in the 60s and 70s that doesn't seem to be there right now. Is there a way to change that? I mean, is that something that can be done at the artistic level? It has to be done more at the corporate level or distribution level or something of that nature, right?
Well, I think it would take, you know, I thought it was interesting that Beyonce at the Super Bowl had kind of a controversial, you know, I think that they came out kind of doing the Black Panthers kind of a style, which was, pretty edgy. I thought that was impressive. But I think what you're going to have to be is kind of a Jay-Z or a Beyonce or maybe, you know, a Coldplay, one of these groups that are huge already, and then turn the corner and suddenly maybe start. I think maybe even more important than their music would be just talking about it in interviews.
Yeah.
But
like the Beatles. I mean, they started talking about Vietnam and things like that before they could actually start doing anything of sort of social, political relevance.
But then, you know, you got to worry, though, because if you start talking too much and gaining too much power and leading parades around New York City and saying, you know, preaching the message of love instead of the message of hate, you might end up with a guy holding Catcher in the Rye in his hand chasing you around the corner, you know?
Yeah. And a doorman who used to work for the CIA, but yeah, that's
exactly.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is something that does need to be kept in mind. Let's talk about something cheerier. Your new album,
okay,
Distortland. All right, so it's been out for a few weeks now. You've done a little tour in the United States. How's it been received so far?
Yeah, really well. I mean, our fans absolutely love it. It's a bit old school dandies, you know, and I think everyone was kind of ready for that. And yeah, and then critically, it's been well received, and we're selling a lot of them, so it's going really well. And the shows have mostly all been sold out, and people are already singing along to the new record, which is good.
That's always a good sign. And the first release so far is "You Are Killing Me." Again, we'll put the link in the show notes so people can check out the video. What's going to be the next single?
I'm not sure yet. It's kind of different country to country. They kind of look at their own cultural landscape and just make a decision based on what's kind of hot at the moment. And, but yeah, I mean, people have thrown out the idea of, you know, maybe, the Stego one or, Catcher in the Rye, you know, it's hard to say. It's different country to country, but I personally think every song on the album is
Of course. And you've got the big European tour coming up. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we're going to hit, 10 or 11 countries, doing a bunch in England, Italy. And I think the two London shows are sold out, which is good. And we're playing a couple festivals. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be, hopefully we'll continue where we left off on this last American trip, which was really successful. And I think we're firing on all cylinders, and it's good.
Yeah. Well, I insist people go to dandywarhols.com and check out that tour schedule. And if they're coming to a town near you, I hope the Corbett Report crowd will represent. Immigrant Union, what's anything on the horizon for your other band?
Yeah, this year is really busy with the Dandies release. So as far as playing live goes, there won't be a ton of shows this year for Immigrant Union, but there'll be a handful, but mainly just here in Melbourne. Oh, well, that would be nice. But I don't even know if Big Day Out's going anymore. But yeah, it would be nice to get on a big festival like that. We just did a really good festival called Boogie Fest before I left on this last trip, which was just beautiful. It was wonderful. But no, we're just in the middle of recording our third album. And it's sounding really, really, really cool. And yeah, I'll let you know when it's ready, when it comes out of the oven.
Please do. And we'll have to have you back on again, if only to do your Ron Paul impression. I think that alone is worth the price of admission. So. Excellent. Well, it's always good to talk to more artists who are out there, who are switched on, and who are producing good music besides. So that's always good. Brent DeBoer, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I'm looking forward to all your work in the future, and thank you again.
Thanks a lot, James. Appreciate you having me on.